You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Good morning. It's 8:06. Nice to have you here up north on this Thursday morning, July 10th, 2025. And coming up later this hour, we will be talking to Joe Zepecki. We will also be talking shortly to Sean O'Malley about your money and the markets. Chad Holmes is off this week competing in Vegas, playing some poker. And then a little, I actually have to check his social media, see if he is still playing in a tournament there or if he's just enjoying the buffets now. And then we'll talk to him next week about his Vegas experience. But first, let's get an update on the forecast from meteorologist Brittany Merlot, as we don't have the hot, humid, you know, yesterday it was great to go for a Jeep ride, but, yeah. You know, when you're at a red light or something, like the sun just beats down on you. Not that I'm complaining. I'm just saying there's a lot of dark hair up here. It just it absorbs it all, you know?
It does.
It does. And so today feels a little bit different here in the Chippewa Valley, at least.
Oh, it's pretty nice for now. Very temporary, unfortunately. We've got a warm front that is slowly creeping into the state. It's going to start to push into western areas in just a few hours, continuing to spread statewide. So it is going to start to get muggy by later today. And we are looking at chances of rain really ramping up over the next 3 days, actually. So we do have chances of light showers, probably starting, like I said, into the western areas along that warm front late this morning. But then by this afternoon, around 3 or 4 or so, we're going to start to see some thunderstorms sparking up. So those will continue into the evening, and more rounds still expected overnight through tomorrow and into our Saturday as the cold front slams the state. So that is going to cool our temperatures, like the humidity behind that on Sunday, but we're still staying into summery temperatures behind it as well. So what we've got to deal with over the next few days is the potential for flash flooding. I don't want to scare you guys, but I want you to be aware that these storms are going to be moving slow. There's a lot of moisture associated with them, and they could dump a lot. And of course, if you get a lot of rain over concrete areas in the cities, you could see some flash flooding on roads. And then also rivers are going to be rising too. So just keep an eye out for that as we go through the next few days. And of course, be safe driving. Turn around, don't drown, right? It's a catchy phrase, but it's true, because those roads wash out. Highways can wash out. Culverts can, you know, collapse, and the road can be gone underneath. And you don't know if there's electricity or stuff underneath there either. I wouldn't risk it. Don't do it. Don't drive through it. But of course, we need the rain.
No, yeah. But again, the turnaround, don't drown, is it's not just a convenient rhyme.
No.
It's only there to save your life. Tom and Jackson on the text line, please compliment Brittany on what a lovely radio voice. We can't.
Thank you.
It gets too full of herself. No, we can't. You know, I mean, listen to her. Just, it's all ego, that girl. I tell you.
No, what?
And this one, I don't know if this one's for you or me or Parker. It says, and this is on the text, RTRERACCNGOODEADDEATOGETE.
Say what?
That was 33 minutes ago. It was followed by one that says, I have no idea what my phone just did. Somebody
butt dial?
Somebody butt dialed us using the text feature on the Civic Media app. That's got to be a first.
We've had a couple of fun text line weird occurrences today. Yeah.
See, and now we got to get it through the voice note feature. We got to get people who, you know, they were going to leave us a voice note, maybe decided not to, forgot to hit stop, and then we get, you know, maybe we learn some state secrets. I don't know.
Right. They really feel.
Yes. So again, you can use that voice note app to ask Brittany a weather question or a comment or anything like that. And on an earlier topic about from Todd Alba, hitting Culver's late night. I did not know. Luke Mathers tells us on the text line that his Culver's is open until midnight and it is dangerous.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of them are more in the 11 o'clock area. Although Luke says the Madison locations are open late. Tell your friends, he says. So, yeah, if you get late night munchies for, you know, either a butter burger or, you know, a sundae. And who wouldn't want a sundae late at night? Doesn't that sound good?
It's true.
Oh, it's
a little
so
late
good.
Night ice cream.
Yeah, their flavor of the day.
That reminds me, I still have ice cream cake left in the freezer for my birthday.
What?
Ooh, and you're not sharing with Todd Alba.
I'm not. No, I'm not bringing that to the fair.
So I will
at least we know what I'm having 50 minutes from right now. Brittany, thank you so much. Have a wonderful
day.
You
too.
All right. So as I mentioned, Chad Holmes is in Vegas this week. He talked about this last week. He loves to compete in poker tournaments. He had a little bit of drama getting started in Vegas this week. I'll be very curious to see how he's been progressing through his tournaments there. So we'll catch up with him next Tuesday when he's back. I'm sure he will be doing local updates on 98.9 WXCO in Wausau on Monday. But regardless, we'll have him back on Tuesday. But that gives us a few extra minutes to visit with Sean O'Malley to talk about your money and the markets, because there are more than one or two things going on when it comes to your money and the markets. And so let's bring in Sean to talk a bit about what's new. Sean, how are you?
Doing all right, Pat. Doing all right. Yeah, there are a couple of new things.
Just a couple of new things. Isn't this the week? This is the week of the deadlines. The deadlines.
The deadline was yesterday.
90
yeah,
deals in 90 days. How are we doing?
Still one.
Okay. Well, you know, room for progress, shall we say.
90 days. How about one? How's one for you? Is one good for you?
Okay.
That's all we've got in terms of deals. But with the July 9th tariff deadline coming and going without event, other than the Trump administration sending out a rather, I've been debating how to characterize these, puerile, silly, factually inaccurate, those all apply. I think dumb is the one that I've heard most commonly in the other press.
Yes.
Letters, basically threatening new tariffs to specific countries. The interesting thing is that it was a form letter. So yes. The only thing that changed in letter to letter was the name of the country.
And again, I mean, this is what passes for diplomacy, is sending a form letter and just changing the name, and then sometimes getting the gender mixed up because you forgot to change it from one letter to the other. So the letters have gone out all about bringing money back to the U.S. through these tariffs. I don't think it works that way, Sean. I don't think it does.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. That gets to that inaccurate, you know, factually inaccurate part of the commentary. This is not money that's going to be coming from overseas anywhere. No government is going to be paying taxes to the United States. What's going to be happening is that any tariffs that are put in place that are country specific, what's going to be happening is that anyone who imports products from that country into the U.S. is going to be paying those tariffs here in the U.S. So what's going to be happening is it's not going to be money coming from, say, for example, South Korea, excuse me. North Korea, that'd be a big problem.
That'd be really sad if they were exporting, yeah.
Yeah, sanctions violation. Mm-hmm. Coming from South Korea, say, TV set or something like that.
Sure.
So the government of South Korea is going to be paying absolutely nothing. What's going to be happening is that whoever's importing those TVs from South Korea is going to be paying the tariff here in the United States. So what you're basically going to have happen is some entity in the U.S., be it a company, be it an individual, they're going to be paying the tariff to the U.S. government. So it's going to be an economic transfer from
it's a tax.
A U.S. company or a U.S. citizen to the U.S. government. Yes, it is a tax. It is absolutely a tax.
I mean, that's all it is. And to me, this is like a great, the great national civics lesson or the great national economics lesson is how many Americans will we be educating about this? And which ones are still going to be reciting the talking points about bringing all this money into the U.S. when that's not what it does? it was never going to do. But so we've got these tariff letters that are going out. The new deadline, quote unquote, is August 1st. If you believe that, then I've got a taco to sell you because, you know, Trump will chicken out yet again. And yet, I mean, it's theater, Sean. I mean, it's manufacturing a crisis.
Correct.
And then when you back off of it, you make yourself look good. Like, I'm going to start this building on fire. Oh, I'm not. Aren't I a good person? It's right. Really like that, yeah. Right?
Exactly. And we have this from, you know, a source that's very reputable, very close to the process, obviously does not want to provide their name because that would probably be the end of their career. But they're saying that, yeah, it's all just demonstrative theater. It's just kind of using it to manipulate the market, manipulate the political environment, and, you know, people's focus and time and efforts. It's a distraction. It's not real. It's a phantom.
So that's the stuff country by country, but then there are some product ones as well. And folks have been talking lately about a tariff that was put in place on copper. What's the story on that?
Yeah. So in addition to the existing tariffs we already have on two other metals, steel and aluminum of 25% each, we now have a tariff on copper for 50%. So what we're seeing certainly in the marketplace, because all of these metals trade on commodities exchanges, there's a big dislocation between overseas copper markets and the U.S. copper market in terms of the futures prices due to the tariff being levied. So what it means in the long run, or even in the short run for the United States, is that these metals are going to get more expensive. For anyone, any manufacturer who uses steel or aluminum or copper. So now you're talking not just automotive, you're talking copper is used in the manufacture of certain electronics parts. So a lot of that industry is also going to be impacted significantly by these tariffs. And, you know, you will see an economic slowdown due to these frictions, due to these taxes being imposed on any company using any of these three metals.
I guess when I hear about the tariffs on steel and aluminum, I can almost think of like American industries that this is allegedly supposed to help, though it probably hurts more people than it helps. And the same goes for timber tariffs from Canada. I have a tougher time with this copper one. Is there something that would be so much more improved in the United States by having a big tariff on imported copper? Because I'm not aware of it.
No, it's really not designed to have any significant economic impact. Copper is, you know, we're not a huge producer
I didn't
of
think
copper.
So. Yeah.
No. So we're not protecting any industry with that one. And really, we're not protecting anything with aluminum because, you know, that's bauxite or aluminium. And that's predominantly, you know, in the Southern Hemisphere in countries other than the U.S. So, you know, this is, again, it's designed to be protectionism, but it really just winds up being a financial penalty.
I was going to say it's almost performative because if it's a fairly small impact, but you can put a big number on it, like 50%, you know, you can make it look like you're doing something when you actually are not. We are talking with Sean O'Malley, finance and economics expert, and we will continue that conversation for some of you. Others will have a local update coming up, and then when we're all back together in the next half hour, we will be talking to Joe Zepecki, followed by Matt Nair on Air at 9 o'clock. From the heart of America's up north, live from Lake Wissota, thanks for making this the place to spend part of your mornings. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Here's my usual reminder. Sign up for our newsletter. You can get it every day. Sign up at upnorthnewswi.com. Click subscribe in the banner on top of the homepage. While you're there, also on the website, new Article 10 books by Wisconsin authors to add to your summer reading list. Wisconsin may be well known for its local beer and cheese production, but the talents don't stop there. Dozens of graphic novelists, poets, authors across all genres have called Wisconsin their home, including Milwaukee native Peter Straub, who went on to write the national bestseller Ghost Story. If you want to stock your summer reading list with Wisconsin authors, search Wisconsin authors on our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click 10 books by Wisconsin authors to add to your summer reading list to find some top picks. Make sure to check out the link at the bottom of the article as well to find out where you can get access to free books in person and online. And over on our social media site, if you scroll down through Facebook, probably Instagram as well, you can see Selena Heller's interviews with members of the Blue Angels when they were in the Chippewa Valley recently, talking about what the concept of serving their country means to them and doing so through the Blue Angels. So again, find that on our social media. Search Up North News WI and find us right there. We'd love to have you follow us along. Let's continue our conversation here with Sean O'Malley about your money and the markets. And let's wrap up our conversation on tariffs by saying, I was saying earlier, I hope this is a great, you know, civics and economic lesson for Americans, that they more and more of them figure out how this is a bad strategy. And Sean, according to polling, that is actually starting to happen.
That is correct, Pat. What we're seeing in the polls is that despite this performative theater from the Trump administration, the majority of Americans in every poll that has been conducted on this issue regarding the tariffs, the disapproval rate is typically in sort of the mid 50s to lower 60s on average. Even Fox News came out with a 59% disapproval on it. So I think it's going to be harder and harder for those who are living in that sort of alternative information sphere, focused on, you know, right wing, you know, talking points and reinforcing them. They're not going to be able to hang on to their sort of perceptions based on identity politics. They're going to have to start dealing with the realities of the economics.
Well, I mean, we did hear last week, you know, a chorus of folks saying, you see, you misjudged us because the labor force number was good, especially, well, it was good compared to the day before when the estimate of it showed an expected loss of jobs. The actual employment report showed a gain of jobs. So, of course, the Trump administration, you know, jumped on that. But that report notwithstanding, what are your expectations for other economic reports we're going to get this summer?
Yeah, well, at the end of the month here, we're going to get the Q2 first estimate of GDP. Now, majority of experts are saying that they are expecting it to go up. I am in the minority. I'm going to vote against that. I'm looking at the impact of the tariffs from, you know, that were put back in place in April, and a lot of the shipping shutdown that hit over basically a, you know, 6-week period, starting basically early April and going through until really later May, and looking at sort of the GDP potential impacts there across the board of that slowdown, I'm figuring, okay, you got 2 out of the 3 months where you're dealing with a pretty significant economic slowdown. I'm not sure that's going to guarantee you the growth that the majority of them are expecting. So I'm unfortunately going to be the bearish one on this and say that we could have, in fact, another quarter of economic slowdown, which, as we've talked about before on your show, Pat, 2 consecutive quarters of GDP contraction means technically a recession. Now, even if that were to happen, it would be a pretty mild recession, but it could just be the start of it rather than the end of it. So we'll have to keep our eyes open on what's going to be going on with the rest of the economy throughout the summer.
But I mean, the whole point being, we were having this phenomenal recovery that somebody managed to turn into a recession. Even a mild recession is still a recession compared to where we were. But when you talk about being in the, you know, there's two different views on this. That is underscored by the New York Times headline about the minutes of the recent Federal Reserve meeting, It says Fed minutes underscored divisions over the pace of interest rate cuts. The U.S. Central Bank's decision to hold interest rates steady in June was unanimously supported, but officials were starting to splinter over the path forward. So, I mean, you're not the only one that's out there saying, could go this way, could go that way.
Yeah, that's right, Pat. Initially, any sort of rate cuts that were discussed, the initial time frame was, I think, September. And then after the June meeting, they were talking more like a December timeframe. And now that seems to have possibly come back in again, because I think we are seeing some signs of economic softness. And we'll have to see just, you know, how that all measures out.
But how much more difficult is their job when they're getting public pronouncements from the president, or he's actually sending letters to them, you know, trying to essentially whip them into lowering interest rates? It's taking a group that is working so hard to maintain what little independence anything has left in this government and remain credible.
Yeah, that's quite true. And normally it wouldn't be a big issue if Jerome Powell was going to be in the seat for, you know, a number of years, because most Fed chairmen are appointed for, you know, about a 10-year term. However, he's sort of getting to the end of his term. So, and even though he was put in by Trump in the first administration, Trump clearly seems very unhappy about him. And there is open conversation about who's going to be the next Fed chairperson.
He definitely is not the first, nor would he be the last person appointed by Trump, who then Trump then soured on because he was hearing things that weren't completely 100% in line with what Trump wanted them to do. Sean O'Malley, thank you as always. Enjoy the rest of the week.
Thanks, Pat. You too. Take care.
Yeah, you bet. Coming up next, we'll be talking to Joe Zepecki, but first a reminder, sign up for our newsletters, plural. Head over to our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com, live from Lake Wasota. What a great place to spend part of your mornings. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. The Milwaukee Brewers swept the LA Dodgers for the first time in franchise history in Milwaukee. Jackson Chourio singled home the winning run in the 10th inning. The Brewers rallied to beat the Dodgers 3-2. The Dodgers, the defending World Series champions, now have a 6-game losing streak going. They are off today. They begin a 3-game series at home against the Washington Nationals Friday, Saturday, Sunday before the All-Star break. And then after the All-Star break, their first series is next week Friday at the LA Dodgers. So the road doesn't get any easier. But you can catch the Brewers National Series starting tomorrow. Coverage begins at 6:35 on several Civic Media stations across the network. Let's bring in Joe Zepecki at 8:36. Joe is here, and I don't have any place to start that is as surprising as waking up this morning and learning that the former congressman from up north, Sean Duffy, is the new interim administrator of NASA. I'm not aware of the qualifications involved other than having a spat with Elon Musk. And so I guess Trump putting Sean Duffy in there is a way to keep Elon Musk from taking over NASA. But that was not on my bingo card, Sean Duffy running NASA.
No, nor on mine. Mm-hmm. I was told over and over again that the Trump administration had done this so much more thoroughly and intentionally this time, and that they had so many people lined up to go and staff the government so that they could implement Project 2025. And in a lot of respects, they actually have.
Yes.
But not in this one.
No.
And it just continues to demonstrate over and over again that they're not serious about anything. They're approaching this like third, fourth, maybe fifth graders, giving them the benefit of the doubt, and just making it up as they go along. And that is a deadly, terrible, awful, toxic stew when you have the intentionality and the bureaucratic mind that Stephen Miller has when it comes to arresting people who have lived here for years, broken no laws, paying taxes. It's terrifying. On the other hand, you've got people like Kristi Noem who don't know how to run organizations that they are responsible for, who it turns out in reporting that came out yesterday, as Texas was flooding and families were losing their little girls by the dozens, Ms. Noem, as the head of this Department of Homeland Security, could not, would not, did not authorize the deployment of urban search and rescue teams, who are some of the toughest, bad word I can't say on the radio, people we've got in federal service who go into crises like this and pull people out. And she seemed unable to pre-position those resources despite the fact they were needed. And so those assets didn't get to Texas until Monday morning, 72 hours after there was a crisis.
Here is the exact quote from Kristi Noem talking about her visit to Texas. She said, quote, "We as a federal government don't manage these disasters. The state does. We come in and support them. And that's exactly what we did here in this situation," she said falsely. "Americans helping one another after such tragic events is proof that God created us to take care of each other." To which I would respond, yeah, by pooling our resources together, putting those tax dollars into a competent system of government that can act quickly with experts, economies of scale, and actual plans. And Kristi Noem's talk is as foolish as it is incompetent, as it is insulting.
Yeah. And like, there is an actual reason for this. We're not just dunking on Noem because she's a, you know, less than stellar cabinet choice. She is a less than stellar cabinet choice, to be clear. But she comes in into this big, massive department and says, we're going to impose new financial controls and nobody is allowed to spend more than $100,000 on one thing without the sign off of the secretary. I got to get my department's spending under control. And in a vacuum, that sounds okay. But then when you see a crisis unfolding and you see her racing to get down to Texas to go on camera, which is a part of emergency response, I'm not disputing that, but she can't find the 5 minutes it takes to sign the piece of paper that allows these assets to pre-position so they can literally go and save lives, then you're not very good at running the organization. Then you have set a standard that does not make sense. In this instance, maybe you say it applies to every organization within DHS other than FEMA, or when there is not a ticking clock. We have heard incredible stories about heroism, individual Coast Guard rescue swimmers saving more than 100 people, one guy. And Kristi Noem stood in the way, and because of her decision-making and lack of leadership, assets that could have done that kind of thing were not deployed to Texas. I am old enough to remember a time in our politics where that fact alone would mean that a cabinet secretary was going to be cleaning out their desk by Monday. I don't have a lot of confidence that's going to happen here.
Oh, no, no. She'll be rewarded if nothing else. To bring it back, when we talk about people not in the right roles, and we talk about Sean Duffy heading up NASA, folks might be tempted to think, well, they look at the article in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel today by Lawrence Andrea, all about how the falling out between Elon Musk and Donald Trump has now led people like Ron Johnson and Derek Van Orden to back off of their man crushes of the world's richest man. And people might say, well, you see, it was, you know, Sean Duffy having that fight with Elon Musk that helped take the bloom off that rose. I would argue, Joe, it's not Sean Duffy's credit. It's the credit of the Wisconsin voter who in April saw what Elon Musk was trying to do and said, no, not here.
Yeah, the 11-point butt kicking. Yes. After Elon made himself the belle of the ball. It was that election that literally brought Elon back down to Earth. I'm trying to figure out how to make a beam me up Duffy joke in there, and I'm not sure it's going to work.
It's okay.
But yeah, it's, when people become a political liability, Trump and his goons cut them loose. And that's just, you understand it. Mm-hmm. The problem is that that approach has infected the entire Republican Party, and they are not, at the moment, a group that is operating as if they have any principles other than what's good for me in the next 10 minutes. And that when you put people in positions of authority and power, you want them to have principles, even if you disagree with them or see them a different way. Like, that's a bet leads to better outcomes. If you know that, like, listen, I might disagree with Pat, but I know that he is coming from a place of principle in the way that he is voting or the way that he is refusing to vote for something. That is more worthy of respect than what the Republican Party under Donald Trump has become, where they are all sycophants slathering at the behest of Trump, who has been known to go from one extreme to the other on an issue, on a person, on a moment's notice, because it is politically convenient in the moment. And we are losing something important in this constant chase of, let's just get through the day. Well, you know, let's just get through the hour. Let's just get through the next 10 minutes. That's how they're governing. And there is a cost to that that we are seeing, from Texas to the millions of people who are going to lose healthcare, to the strategic step backwards that this country is taking in our competition with China to be the global leader for the next 100 years, as you talk about things like climate change. And that there is a cost to all of this, and we know what some of it is, but we don't yet know what all of it is.
Let's turn to state politics for a moment. The state budget passing, and it being the result of some bipartisan talks, but that does not mean folks from both parties are racing to embrace it. And there are, admittedly, a lot of progressive folks who are angry at Governor Evers. And how worried should I be that the folks angry at Evers, who would normally be allies, will not be as fully participatory next year, shall we say? Is it just misdirected anger and put the focus back on the GOP? Or, As they've told me, you know, that's a convenient cop out to say we've got to vote for Democrats no matter what. How do we process the anger that people are feeling who would normally be allied with Democratic actions?
This one's really hard.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is a school of thought that says, okay, folks, tell me how the Donald Trump presidency is working out for you. Because we saw this on the left in 2024, right? People took their ball and went home. And now we have this madness unfolding. And I think that's reductive and overly simplistic. It's okay for me to feel that way, though, to be like, want to shake people and go, what are you talking about? It is also okay for them to be frustrated because this budget wasn't good enough. This budget does not live up to what would happen if there was unified control across all three branches. And to me, when you get knocked down, you take an L, the response is, how do we get more next time? How do we strategically build power to make sure we're not in this position again next time? It is not, well, I'm going to take my ball and go home. Or, well, I got knocked on my can, I'm going to stay on the ground. How do you think Coach Z likes that when somebody falls down at football practice and doesn't want to get back up and get back in the game? That is actually the mistake or choice made on a football field that makes me angrier than anything else. And so when progressives are threatening to do that kind of thing because this set of budget negotiations, they didn't get everything they want, I'm sorry. That makes me a little angry. They have agency. We have agency in this. And the math is what the math is. Tony Evers had a hostile, not unfriendly, hostile legislature to work with, and he got wins. He didn't get all of them. It's not the budget he proposed, but the idea that because he didn't veto the entire budget, we're going to go, well, you're on your own. Sorry, folks. Yeah. That's not the way this works.
Right. That, and that again gives me, you know, PTSD from 2010, and that's a counseling issue we'll share for another time. From Tony, and I couldn't agree more. I think the governor should be going back to his original budget and sharing it with people, saying this is what we wanted. Give Democrats control, and this is what you'll get. And he also notes, I disagree with Pat all the time. For example, he should be exploring a run for governor, but he just keeps talking about writing books and doing radio shows. A local update is next for some of you. Others will come back here for some final news and notes with Joe Zepecki here from Lake Wasota. Remember, you can follow my team at Up North News all day through our newsletters, social media, our website, and of course, right here, mornings on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Pat Wrightlaw.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Well, tomorrow is Friday, and so you know what that means. We'll be talking to Courier Newsroom National Correspondent Kia Vakil from Los Angeles. We will also be having our weekend review panel with former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel and Chicago veteran journalists Mark Jacob and Jennifer Scholze. We'll have Dr. Kristen Lyerly, I think she's in Washington, D.C. this week, and giving us a preview of her weekend show on Civic Media. Mike Clemens will help us preview the weekend in sports with the Brewers and the National Series that starts tomorrow. Coming off that sweep of the Dodgers, Joe Zepecki, did you get to the game on Wednesday afternoon?
We did, and we stayed through the bitter end when Churio hit the
10th inning thing.
Hit the 10th inning single to bring in the winning run. It's, you know, it's a lot of fun to watch a game where you never lead until it's over.
Yes.
It's a different kind of fun, but man, this team, it has no quit and a lot of grit, and Shohei, I expected more from. He did not have a very good day.
Well, especially after that leadoff home run against Mizorowski, it's like, oh, there's Shohei Ohtani doing Shohei Ohtani things. And but that almost seemed to be the peak for the series for him. Freddie Freeman is it's not a slump, but he's not putting up Freddie Freeman numbers.
Yeah.
And you see this a lot in baseball, well, practically all sports, where it's almost like when they get so top heavy with payroll, they like become off balance. They can't maintain all the expectations that are there. And that's fine with me. I'm good with that.
Yeah,
I don't think I got to talk to you about this since the NBA draft, but the way I would sum up most of the comments is that after the draft, and please stop with the Giannis trade talk, after the draft, the Bucks are still one more move away from being fiercely competitive in this upcoming season. So there's a lot of people going, it's good, but they got to do one more thing. And I don't know if that's wishful thinking or if that's strategic thinking.
It being one move away from being one move away is a tough place to be. The Bucks will be competitive every single day that Giannis is in uniform. And the East is down, so it shouldn't take much. The problem is, and I hold ownership accountable for this, there's been changes to the ownership even since we won the title. They're making short-term moves that give a little sugar high, but are mortgaging the long-term future. And I'm just not sure how much longer we can stay this. Like, Giannis does not strike me as a guy dying to leave. I think he's a guy who, if you lay out, here's the five-year plan to, you know, recoup some assets we've traded away to try and build a sustainable future for this franchise, I think he would be open to that. And I'm not seeing it.
My biggest fear, of course, and it is of everybody, that you don't want to put Giannis in the same sentence as Dan Marino and Mike Trout and all those others who barely get a taste of what could happen because they didn't build a team around everything that they were giving day after day.
Neither of those guys has a championship. How dare you?
That's point well taken. Exactly. Let's see. Let's get back over to some of the news of the day. And can I just say about the UW tuition hike? And I said this on Todd Albo's show yesterday as well, and it's going to make me sound a bit insensitive, but there was a lot of blowback to the announced tuition hike at the UW system. It's not that that's a great thing. It's not necessarily. It doesn't bug me as much because I always keep coming back to the poor state support as a share of a college student's cost compared to, you know, for decades prior. And that, you know, state government should be doing more to lessen the burden of tuition, whatever the tuition level is. But again, I understand that's like one step removed from being upset about the tuition increase. What were your thoughts? Was it just bad timing to do it right after the state budget is passed, or is it does it not concern you? What are your thoughts?
It is the reality of where we are. It is, you know, multiple things can be true at the same time. I say that all the time, and in this case, they are. The governor got the largest increase to the UW system, much long needed investments. I think like $800 million for capital projects. We got to do those things. And celebrating that win while bemoaning the fact that Wisconsin families are going to have to continue to shell out more and more, that sucks. And it is a result of years and years and years of neglect from a legislature run by Republicans that is hostile to higher education. And if you want to see change, my advice to you is not to pack it up and go home. It is to engage. It is to figure out how we win the trifecta in 2026. Get engaged. Stay engaged. Don't take your ball and go home.
Boy, you sound like somebody that was on yesterday around this time. Melissa Baldoff, I think you're familiar with her. Also talking about the trifecta.
Smart and, lady.
Isn't she, though? Yeah. And saying, look, again, much like you know, Tony said in the last segment, is have that focus on what we could be doing. And what we could get if everybody applies themselves next year and sees through the garbage. And by the way, there will be a lot of garbage because to avoid talking about Medicaid cuts and everything, you're going to hear, look, there's a trans person. And, oh, look, there's an undocumented migrant, you know, who committed a crime. There's going to be a lot of that. And they are not that they are not issues of one sort or another, but there's going to be a lot of distractions thrown at the voter.
Yeah. And listen, one of the takeaways from the federal budget reconciliation disaster is almost everything's going to cost more for consumers. That includes higher education because student loans are going to cost more. It includes healthcare because that's going to cost more, even if you have health insurance and have never been on Medicaid. Energy costs are going to increase. On issue after issue, the Republican MAGA policy choices are making things cost more. That is going to cost you, listener, and hit you in your pocketbook.
Gee, I heard the same thing from Congressman Mark Buchan earlier. We have a lot of wise people on this show, I've come to appreciate. And as far as getting the message out, Tony gets the last word. If only we had a statewide radio network to help get that message out. Well, yeah, one that has a phenomenal social media presence as well. Thank you, Tony. Thank you, Joe Zepecki. Appreciate it very much.
Have a good weekend.
All right. You as well. Thanks to all of you for joining us. My thanks to Sean O'Malley, Joe Zepecki, Todd Alba, Brittany Merlot, Parker Olson, and to you for being here this morning. I'm Pat Kreitlow, founding editor of Up North News. Up North News is the Wisconsin digital outlet for Courier, a pro-democracy news network. Have a great Thursday. Might see you at the Northern Wisconsin State Fair today and back here tomorrow, 6 a.m. Up North.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.